Good evening, and thank you for joining E*TRADE's fourth quarter and full year 2014 earnings conference call. Joining the call today are Chief Executive Officer Paul Itzik and Chief Financial Officer Matthew Audette. Today's call may include forward-looking statements which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, the company may also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP figures, and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future results of E*TRADE Financial, please refer to our earnings release, furnished with Form 8-K, and our 10-Ks, 10-Qs, and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are available at about.etrade.com. This call will present information as of January 22, 2015. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. The call is being recorded, and a replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. With that, I will now turn the call over to Mr. Itzik.
Wow, that's the last time I complain about the hold music. Good evening. It is truly a pleasure to be joining you to share our perspectives on E*TRADE's performance and progress in 2014. This was a momentous year for E*TRADE, one in which we benefited from a more focused organization and reshaped our brand, both to better connect with our customers. A year of sustained operation under a significantly upgraded risk management framework, ensuring we executed deliberately and with the right controls. And even more striking, all our accomplishments are buoyed by the strong financial position and regulatory standing we've had in years, leading to consistent delivery on our capital plan and value creation for our shareholders, while positioning us to create even more in the future. Building on this momentum, and on behalf of the board and my colleagues, I am incredibly proud to announce the most significant developments the company has seen in years with respect to capital efficiency and company structure. To quickly summarize the announcements we made today, we received the go-ahead from our regulators to operate E*TRADE Bank at a leverage ratio of 9% and to remove our broker-dealers from under the bank, placing them closer to the parent, enabling us to distribute to the parent excess capital of approximately $430 million. We will cover these items in more detail shortly. Now back to 2014 and a quick walkthrough of our key highlights. During the year, we posted our strongest bottom-line results since 2006, saw record customer engagement across a host of metrics, particularly in asset and account growth, evolved the public face of E*TRADE with a revamped brand platform, enhanced the digital experience for our customers, seized opportunities to eliminate asymmetric risks by selling legacy assets and a non-core business, navigated our first required stress test submission with satisfying results and feedback, received regulatory approval for consistent quarterly capital distributions from our bank, and paid down corporate debt with cash for the first time in the company's history. This is a distinguished list of achievements, and I cannot thank my colleagues enough for their hard work this year. When I began 2 years ago, we went to great lengths to realign our internal operating structure to empower colleagues to execute more effectively. We then took a hard look at our processes to see what we could improve. During 2014, we were well into implementation, and we were just starting to see the benefits of increased rigor, improved connectivity across the firm, and the upgraded quality of our delivery, all centering on a resolute drive that everything we do results in improvements to the customer and drives long-term value for our owners. With these many internal changes, we are well positioned to deliver the industry-leading products and top-notch services our customers deserve. We are just beginning to see this culture impact our results and look forward to more fully witnessing the product of our labors in the coming years. You've heard me talk a lot about our commitment to reclaim our disruptive digital roots. In pursuit of this goal, we've also realigned our technology development to be more intricately woven into the fabric of our entire organization. Our technologists now work more seamlessly across the company, to wipe out customer pain points and deliver innovative products backed by more rigorous and robust design and testing. As a result, this quarter caps a year of significant additions and enhancements to the digital experience for our customers. Most recently, we rolled out new customer navigation for eTrade.com, delivering a more elegant and intuitive web experience. We also further enhanced the mobile experience through added stock plan functionality, which builds on a year of impressive mobile advancements, including our iOS 8 app with first-to-market functionality, new ETF screeners, and additional research tools and resources, just to name a few. Our innovative browser trading app came out of beta this quarter, which delivers real-time quotes, research and trade execution on any web page being browsed. This follows a year in which we enhanced our online advisor and fixed income solution center, added more functionality to our elite trading platform, eTrade Pro, and launched back-end enhancements, allowing us to be more nimble with delivery of web content. These efforts, atop our already strong offerings, resulted in external recognition throughout the year across a number of renowned publications. We received a 4-star rating from Barron's and Best in Mobile from Kiplinger's. Stockbrokers.com awarded us #1 ratings for mobile and client dashboards, along with 5 best-in-class ratings for customer service, investor education, research, mobile trading, and new investors. We were named most improved in the industry by J.D. Power and given a #1 rating for client satisfaction and loyalty for the 3rd consecutive year by industry critic Group 5 for our stock plan management platform, Equity Edge Online. As a digital-centric organization, we devote significant time and energy to make sure we deliver an industry-leading mobile experience. The accolades we have received attest to my colleagues' success in building a robust digital mobile environment, which is only increasing importance across the industry. About 12% of our trades came through our mobile app during the 4th quarter. Even more telling, over a quarter of customer logins occurred through this channel, proof that the future of personal finance is increasingly, quite literally, in the palm of our customers' hands. Our digital experience, however, is only one side of the E-Trade coin, as it's backed by personal support and expert guidance. So this year, we also enhanced the human experience, capitalizing on the new leadership in our corporate services division, customer service teams, financial consultants, sales, and branches, and arming our frontline employees with better tools to meet our customers' wants and needs. Turning to our financial results, we recorded earnings of $1.12 for the year on net income of $330 million, excluding a $59 million pre-tax charge related to our debt transaction in November. Earnings benefited from increased customer engagement, low credit costs, and an elevated net interest spread. Following Q1's multi-year high in DARTs, trading activity held in well, increasing 12% for the year, inclusive of a 10% sequential increase in Q4. Options continue to account for about 22% of trades in Q4, consistent with the full-year mix. Our customers' trading across other asset classes continues to be minimal, with futures accounting for 1.5% of trades and Forex making up about 30 basis points. Trading in January to date is holding quite steady compared to December, currently up 3% thus far. While solid, not exactly the jump in activity we'd like to see to start the year, as investors have remained somewhat sidelined in light of uncertainty around oil and major turbulence within European markets and currencies. Another important indicator of customers' engagement with the market is margin receivables, which reached record levels during the year and ended at $7.7 billion, down from 8.1 at the end of Q3. The yield actually ticked up this quarter for the first time since 2011 as a result of the balances shifting to higher pricing tier accounts. In terms of bringing in net new assets and accounts, we added over 17,000 net new accounts in the quarter, bringing our full-year total to 146,000, the highest in over a decade. Meanwhile, attrition improved for the 7th consecutive year, albeit modestly to 8.7% from 8.8%. And Q4 was consistent with the prior quarter at 9.1% annualized. Net new assets of $3.5 billion in the 4th quarter brought our 2014 total to $10.9 billion, yet another record and up from $10.4 billion in each of the previous 2 years. These numbers are encouraging, and even more so when noted that 1/3 of our net new assets for the year were in retirement accounts. This is a strategically important area for us, as we strive to do more for our customers across the full spectrum of their investing activity. Building on our unbiased approach to investment products and investment solutions, we've had a lot of success growing our managed assets, which ended the year at $3.1 billion, up a third from the end of 2013. Moving on to expenses and investments in 2015, we intend to carry our momentum forward and continue investing in the business, as we've made a lot of progress and feel good about our continued prospects and related value generation. Let's take a step back. The motive forces behind our investments are, first, our focus on the business and customer offering. This includes everything from our back office to our marketing dollars. We've done a lot in this category, and I can tell you that we've benefited tremendously from our attention here. We operate in a more deliberate manner with more cross-collaboration and more discipline across the business. Along with our foundation, we are investing in customer-facing roles. We continue to elevate the state of play of our service and sales organizations while technology remains at the forefront of our effort. We also continue to spend opportunistically on marketing, environment permitting. And while we are clocking records across assets, accounts, and margins, we have yet to truly yield benefits of our internal improvements here, but I feel sanguine about our prospects. And the second category is far less elective, falling squarely in the table stakes category, and that relates to the investments we've made in response to the heightened demands of today's regulatory and security environments. Our spend in legal risk and compliance alone for 2014 totaled approximately $90 million, which is an increase of 50% from what we spent just 2 years prior. And we expect that number to continue its rise into 2015 to upwards of $100 million, certainly not insignificant, but absolutely necessary to progress with confidence in today's operating and regulatory landscape. While these areas, legal risk and compliance, are often lumped into the category of enterprise risk management, our broader efforts go beyond this level of spend and truly encapsulate the fact that risk is now ingrained in everything we do across the company. We've invested in risk management within all other departments of the firm, as well as our systems and technology related to risk. Our headway in building out these areas has been paramount to our regulatory progress and was prerequisite to our ability to secure the approvals we announced today. Moving on to the capital plan and the jolly important announcements we made today, all of our progress de-risking the company and executing on the components of our plan culminated in significant approvals. First, we received regulatory approval to operate E-Trade Bank at a Tier 1 leverage ratio of 9%, providing more opportunities for capital utilization upon which Matthew will expand. Second, our regulators approved our plan to simplify our legal entity structure, removing our broker-dealer subsidiaries from under E-Trade Bank, which more efficiently positions a source of earnings and capital. And in conjunction with these approvals, excess capital to broker-dealers of approximately $430 million will be distributed to the parent during the first quarter of 2015. Going forward, the excess capital generated by these entities will also be available to the parent. Separately, we plan to request a dividend of another $75 million from the bank to the parent in Q1, and beginning in Q2, we will request quarterly dividends equal to the bank's net income, one quarter in arrears. For a brief history lesson, in 2009, as part of the company's efforts to shore up the bank's financial position and with some logical regulatory encouragement, our introducing broker-dealer E-Trade Securities was moved under E-Trade Bank, where our clearing broker-dealer E-Trade Clearing already resided. This was done to ensure that the bank could stand on its own during a time of significant global stress. Suffice it to say, our bank is now in a much healthier position, so with regulatory approval, we have taken the steps to remove both broker-dealers from under E-Trade Bank in order to create a more streamlined corporate structure. So what does this mean? The income and therefore the capital generation from our brokerage operations will now be housed directly below our parent company, greatly simplifying the movement of capital. Moreover, given the explicit regulatory approval to operate the bank at 9% Tier 1 leverage ratio, we have a much greater flexibility to utilize bank capital generated above that threshold. We're now faced with the high-quality challenge of what to do with this capital, and I assure you it is top of mind for us. Reducing our debt by another $400 million continues to be a priority of ours, though as you can imagine, we are valuing the most appropriate uses beyond that. Again, Matthew will update you more on the process. A final note on the capital front. The issuer received 5 full-notch upgrades by our 3 credit rating agencies, 2 of which occurred in conjunction with our November debt paydown and refinance. While we'd ultimately like to be investment grade, these upgrades are a sound testament to the progress we're making and the greatly improved health of the company. On the management team, I regret to announce that our Chief Marketing Officer, Liza Landsman, has decided to leave the company to pursue other opportunities. Liza was one of my first hires here, and she made significant contributions during her tenure. She revolutionized our approach to marketing, turning what was historically an advertising-centric organization into a data-driven, analytical one that allows us to continue to make deeper and more meaningful connections with customers and prospects. I'm sorry to see her go. At the board level, we've made significant progress to round out and strengthen our director composition, introducing 2 talented individuals over the last few months, Shelley Leibowitz and Jim Healy, both of whom sit on the Risk Oversight Committee. Ms. Leibowitz has a deep history with information technology and most recently worked at the World Bank, overseeing its product delivery infrastructure and managing its cybersecurity program. Mr. Healy has 25 years of experience with the financial markets and investment banking at Credit Suisse, and as an economist at the International Monetary Fund. Both Shelley and Jim are exceptional managers of risk and seasoned operators in their respective fields. With the addition of these 2, and after bringing on a distinguished former Fed president in the past year, our board governance and support is stronger than ever, with a depth of knowledge and expertise across all aspects of our business. In closing, I want to reiterate how proud I am of all the team and all that it accomplished in 2014. As we enter 2015, we have the backbone in place to enhance our relationships with our customers and continue to grow the business. I have every confidence that everything we have done to set up the business for executional excellence will continue to benefit our customers and our owners. And I'm particularly proud of our commitment to continuously improve our regulatory standing and all we have accomplished to bring us to a position of announcing some of the most significant progress we've made since the financial crisis. The vote of confidence from our regulators and the improved capital efficiency in our new corporate structure underscore all that we have done to reduce and manage our legacy risks over the past several years and to install and maintain enterprise risk management capabilities of which we are quite proud. And with that, I will turn the call over to our Operis CFO, Matthew Audette.
Thank you, Mr. Izik. 2014, truly a defining year for the company as we operationalized a very clear focus and path forward that was started in 2013. From a financial standpoint, after laying out a plan less than 3 years ago and executing on all the major components, we took yet another giant step forward with our announcements today. Our unwavering commitment to executing on that plan is quite literally paying dividends. But before I get into that, I'd like to go over our results for the quarter and year. We reported fourth quarter net income of $78 million, or 26 cents per share, excluding a $59 million pre-tax charge related to our corporate debt transactions. This compares to net income of $86 million, or 29 cents per share in Q3, and net income of $58 million, or 20 cents per share in the year-ago quarter. Net revenues of $461 million were up from $440 million in the prior quarter, and $446 million in the year-ago quarter. Revenue included net interest income of $283 million, up $14 million from the prior quarter, as net interest spread increased 15 basis points, and our average assets contracted $400 million. Our Q4 spread of 269 basis points reflected an outsized benefit from stock lending and margin receivables. On stock lending, while we are obviously thrilled with the results, over the past couple of quarters, we have noted a big pullback in stock lending revenue toward the end of the quarter, which has continued into Q1. So from where we sit today, stock loan yields are down meaningfully from Q4. Margin receivables, on a similar note, which benefited from record high average balances and an uptick in yield during the quarter, declined toward the quarter end and remain near those levels today. The macro environment has also failed to cooperate with the unprecedented drop in oil prices, followed by a steep drop in interest rates, obviously having an impact on our marginal rates of reinvestment. So while the environment in Q4 was quite beneficial to spread, the environment we find ourselves in today is much more challenging. And if we assume this current environment holds, our net interest spread would decline to the low to mid 240s. Our balance sheet ended the quarter at $45.5 billion, down $0.3 billion from the prior quarter, as a result of $1.2 billion of customer net buying and $240 million decline in wholesale funding. The decline in wholesale funding was driven by a temporary funding need in Q3 related to customer activity and rolled off during Q4 as planned. We have $365 million of wholesale obligations expiring during 2015, all of which occurred during the second quarter. Commissions, fees and service charges, and other revenue in the third quarter were $172 million, up 6% from the prior quarter and up 8% from the year-ago quarter. Average commission per trade of $10.84 declined 21 cents from the prior quarter and 13 cents from the year-ago period. The sequential decrease was primarily driven by our mix of options and stock plan trades. Fees and service charges revenues of $48 million included $23 million of payment for order flow compared with $22 million in the prior quarter. Net gains on loans and securities were $6 million this quarter, down from $8 million in the prior quarter. Over the next few quarters, we expect gains to continue to be in our range of $5 to $10 million. Though if rates persist at their current low levels, gains would likely be at the high end of that range. Our operating expenses for the quarter were $294 million, up from $277 million in the prior quarter, largely related to marketing and professional services. In marketing, where we typically see a seasonal increase, we also spent dynamically as the environment permitted. And in professional services, there was a mix of both increased hiring as well as some temporary project-related engagements. So there is some room for this to decline going forward. For the full year 2015, we expect a low to mid single-digit percent increase in full year 2015 expenses. The increase is driven mostly by headcount, as we hired throughout 2014 and will have the full year run rate in 2015. It also includes a mid to high single-digit increase in marketing, the area where we obviously maintain the most flexibility. However, with multi-year records and net new accounts and assets in 2014, we are feeling good about our returns on those dollars. The loan portfolio ended the quarter at $6.4 billion, down $320 million from the prior quarter. This was, again, predominantly prepayments, while charge-offs remained minimal at just $7 million. We expect quarterly runoff for 2015 to remain in the range of 4 to 5% per quarter. Provision for loan losses was $10 million in the fourth quarter, flat with the prior quarter. For all of 2014, our provision of $36 million declined 75% from the prior year. While that is tremendous improvement, I want to again reiterate that we expect provision to increase in 2015 and 2016. When the majority of our HELOCs are scheduled to convert to amortizing. With that in mind, there is no change to our $10 to $30 million per quarter range, but a bit more color on our expected timing, with 2015 expected to be at the lower half of that range, and 2016 to be at the upper half. Our allowance for loan losses ended the quarter at $404 million, up marginally from the prior quarter. Reserves for the 1 to 4 book remained stable at $27 million as charge-offs again netted to zero and the release of reserves abated, as we foreshadowed last quarter. Meanwhile, the home equity allowance again inched upward, ending the quarter at $367 million, a $7 million increase. One last point on the loan portfolio. While CLTVs of both portfolios were unchanged from the prior quarter, at 79% for 1 to 4 family and 92% for home equity, they trended downward during 2013, driven by an increase in home prices as well as voluntary principal reductions. Now, with respect to progress on our capital plan, it was a busy year, and we accomplished a tremendous amount. While I know you have heard this before, at least for now, I won't get tired of delivering the recap. So to quickly hit the highlights, we successfully cleared our first round of Dodd-Frank DAC stress tests. We reduced significant tail risk through actions taken on our legacy investments, including the sale of $800 million to TDRs, the elimination of our remaining non-agency CMOs, and the early termination of $100 million of wholesale funding. We demonstrated the sustainability of our enterprise risk management capabilities. We ended the year with a bank Tier 1 leverage ratio of 10.6%, even after dividending a total of $300 million from the bank to the parent. And we put that capital to work with a $400 million reduction of corporate debt in conjunction with a $540 million refinance at the lowest coupons in our company's history. And we are certainly starting 2015 on a high note. As Mr. Izzik covered earlier, we are delighted to announce regulatory approval on one of the key components of our capital plan, operating the bank at a Tier 1 leverage ratio of 9%. Additionally, we received regulatory approval to move our broker-dealers out from under the bank, which marks tremendous progress in achieving ongoing capital flexibility. And lastly, we plan to dividend to the parent excess capital in the broker-dealers of approximately $430 million in Q1, taking yet another significant step toward putting capital to work for our shareholders. With respect to the bank's Tier 1 leverage ratio, we ended the year at 10.6%. Pro forma for the brokerage entity moves, it would be 9.2%, so still above our new 9% target. Regarding the movement of our broker-dealer entities, post the financial crisis, we were left with a constraining legal entity structure where our brokerage subsidiaries resided under our bank. The planned realignment involves moving the two subs out from the bank in an effort to create a more streamlined and simplified legal entity structure. E-Trade Securities, which was moved under the bank in 2009 to serve as a source of strength at the time when the bank needed it, will be moved in early February. And E-Trade Clearing, which previously resided under the bank, will be moved later in the year. Under our old structure, this meant that substantially all of E-Trade's earnings were generated within the bank and were subject to bank regulatory approvals in order to extract the resulting capital. Following this reorganization, a significant amount of capital generation will be within closer proximity to the parent. To put this in context around dividends, our old methodology of $75 million per quarter led to $300 million in 2014 dividends to the parent. Assuming our new structure had been implemented on January 1st, 2014, we would have moved approximately $225 million of earnings from the bank, along with approximately $200 million of capital generation at the broker-dealers. In total, this would have led to dividends of approximately $425 million to the parent. As for Q1, once E-Trade Securities is moved, we plan to dividend excess capital to the parent, which we estimate to be around $430 million. In the first quarter 2015, we also plan to request approval for another $75 million. And in Q2 2015, we will transition to our new methodology of requesting the full amount of the prior quarter's earnings from the bank, as well as distributing the excess capital generated at the broker-dealers. Now, with respect to capital calculations and the forthcoming implementation of Basel III, we've spent a lot of time applying the U.S. final Basel rules to our capital ratios, and there are several items which meaningfully impact us. A few of these we've highlighted previously. These include the phase-out of TRUPS from the parent capital, which will have a negative impact, and changes to the risk weighting across our assets will result in net favorable impact to our ratios, predominantly driven by the way we risk weight margin receivables. One additional impact we've identified is quite positive, and that we will be able to include a much larger portion of our DTA in regulatory capital. While we still have not finalized the impact of these changes, we do expect a meaningful benefit to our capital ratios. And as a reminder, these rules became effective at the beginning of this year, so the impact will be reflected in our Q1 ratios. One other item that impacted our capital ratios in 2014, we benefited from exceptionally robust customer net buying activity of $7.7 billion, which muted natural balance sheet growth. This is well above normalized levels, which are in the $2 to $3 billion range. As we've mentioned in the past, customer activity-related growth is one element that can be challenging to control. To address this, we are in the process of redesigning our program that sweeps balances to third-party banks that will enable us to manage the size of our balance sheet with greater precision while staying in tune with the quality of the customer experience. We expect it to be up and running in the coming months. With regard to cash at the parent, we ended the quarter with corporate cash of $233 million. Assuming our planned Q1 dividends of $430 million and $75 million, pro forma corporate cash would be $738 million. After taking into account debt service needs, this is approximately $500 million above our target of maintaining 2 years debt service coverage. Additionally, at the time we completed our recent debt transactions, we installed the $200 million revolving credit facility, giving us an added layer of liquidity and flexibility. Given all we have accomplished on our capital plan, the questions we are now faced with are less around the timing and process of accessing capital and more around how to put it to use. And that is squarely where our focus lies today. As you're aware, reducing our corporate debt to $1 billion remains a high priority. While the nearest callability on our debt is still 10 months away, we are analyzing whether it makes sense to do something sooner, obviously keeping economics at the top of mind. And there are other options available to us as well. one of the most obvious of which is growing the balance sheet, now that we have regulatory approval to operate the bank at an explicit ratio. Also, while the loan portfolio continues to be most valuable in our hands, and we have no intention of disposing it in the foreseeable future, the secondary market continues to firm up, so we are keeping a watchful eye on market activity. Lastly, and very importantly, we are mindful of the merits of returning capital directly to our shareholders via buybacks and or dividends. So while there are several potential iterations, those are the broad strokes for capital utilization, and we will obviously keep you posted as we make decisions and prepare to take action. So in summary, we accomplished a lot in 2014 and are even better positioned for 2015. I'm excited about the opportunities that lie ahead, both for the business and for our customers, as well as our capital structure and for our shareholders. And with that, operator, we will open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using your speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Our first question comes from the line of Rich Repetto with Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed.
Yeah, good evening, and congratulations on the regulatory approval. It's definitely a meeting, you know, a notable step so forward. So I guess my question, Paul and Matt, is, you know, you hinted or, you know, you went through the laundry list of potential things that you could possibly do. I guess one question is, when would we expect a decision or outline on what you're actually going to implement? And then you mentioned you know, potentially increase in the balance sheet. And from what I understand, this, even if you separate the broker from the bank, it would have no impact on the SIFI designation. So you're saying you're now entertaining potentially growing the balance sheet at the bank to be, you know, in that cap, the $50 billion category.
Rich, it's always nice to hear from you. Thanks for dialing in. I'll take the second part of that question first. And then Matthew will answer the first part of that question, if that's okay with you. On that $50 billion mark, Rich, we still have no intention of going past that number. We think it would raise some significant costs in the near term with limited returns, particularly given where the yield curve is. But where our balance sheet is today, we still have some room to grow if we so choose. And with some of the new facilities put in place, we have the ability to manage our balance sheet to a little better degree than we have in the past. And now Matthew will turn and answer the first part of the question.
Yeah, that's right on the second line, Paul. On the first, Rich, I think the broad strokes that I laid out in the prepared remarks are the things that we're thinking through. I think it's pretty well at this point. As we make decisions on things, we'll update you, the public, and tell you what's going on. I think our primary focus remains on getting our debt down to $1 billion. But I think we're in that place where we've got that high quality problem of figuring out what to do. We are analyzing everything that we highlighted, and we'll just tell you as we make decisions going along. But where we sit today, the debt reduction is still high on our list.
Okay, and then I guess my follow-up, staying on this topic, you certainly did a good job at explaining, you know, the added capital flexibility by having it closer to the parent, the broker, the meaningful generator of earnings. Are there any? I know this is a sensitive question, but is there more flexibility from a corporate transaction standpoint now that that entity is out from underneath bank regulators?
Rich, irrespective of where the broker-dealers sit, we will always be having constructive discussions with our regulators to make sure that they're comfortable with whatever we might do with the business, with our business model or anything else. So, and we don't intend to change wanting to have that type of relationship. So, no, it doesn't really, in practice, change that very much at all.
Okay. I'll get back into you. Congrats on the movement forward you've made here in the quarter. Thanks.
Kind of you. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Alex Blostein with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Hey, great. Good afternoon, guys.
Yeah.
So,
So just picking up on the last topic, maybe we can spend a minute kind of dissecting the opportunities now that we have the kind of holdco excess cash, and then there's the bank. So I guess on the holdco level, maybe help us understand a little bit what are the constraints for you guys to use that excess cash, which I guess you guys defined as about $500 million per former for the transfer, i.e., do you have to ask the regulator for any additional approval for either buyback or debt repurchase? Does the Tier 1 leverage at the holdco level come into effect? And that's so that's the first part of the question.
Yeah. Yes, we would need to get regulatory approval. And as I said, even if that wasn't a formal requirement, it's something that we would do as a matter of how we like to run the business. We not only have leverage ratio requirements at the holdco, but we also will continue to have that leverage ratio requirement at the bank, and that both of those ratios will be carefully examined by us to make sure that we maintain the appropriate leverage ratios as expected by the regulators prior to us even thinking about doing anything.
Gotcha. And then, so the second part of the question, moving on to the bank piece. So 9.2 per form for the transfer, to your point, a little bit above 9. But even with the new methodology, you guys, I think, will still be generating excess capital at the bank kind of over and above the dividend because of the DTA utilization. And that's obviously without even kind of going to even lower target as you guys have outlined before. So maybe spend a minute on how we should think about utilization of that excess capital piece at the bank.
Sure, Alex. So you summarize it well. If history is a guide, we would still be generating a little bit more capital at the bank and growing that ratio. I think there's a couple things to think through, both of which go back to balance sheet size. First is the point I highlighted in the prepared remarks. Our balance sheet really didn't grow during the year because of all the customer net buying. Nearly $8 billion of customer net buying. You typically would not have that amount, right? So when I think about capital utilization, you're going to have if things return to normal levels, you're going to have a natural bias up on the balance sheet size. And then second, to the comments we made and Paul highlighted on an earlier question on our ability to bring deposits back on balance sheet, we're going to get to a place in the next couple months of customer activity driving the amount of deposits that are on balance sheet, transitioning to we can effectively decide very quickly with good precision on how much deposits to put back on balance sheet. That combined with having an explicit Tier 1 leverage ratio of 9%, those two things together I think will give us comfort to bring those deposits back on balance sheet versus where we've been for the last few quarters. We've been running well below that $50 billion mark to have a much bigger buffer. So I think deposits back on balance sheet is one of the primary things, but just reiterating a few of the other things that we highlighted in the prepared remarks, we'll be looking at things like making sure we're following the loan portfolio, things like the wholesale funding, all the things that we've talked about before, we will continue to analyze.
Got it. And you guys will be, and again, the way we talk about the balance sheet size is just, total consolidated basis, right? So like you guys are at $46 billion or so right now. So and you'd be comfortable going up almost to the $50 billion level. Is that the right way to characterize that?
Yeah, it's definitely a consolidated balance sheet. And then when thinking through bringing deposits back on, as wholesale funding runs off, that creates capacity to bring deposits back on without increasing balance sheet size.
Yep, makes sense. And just the last one for me. Matt, I think you mentioned both of these numbers, but I just want to make sure we get it right. When we think about the actual just capital generation now at the bank sub and the broker-dealer sub, what are those two numbers now? I know you said kind of with respect to the dividend that you would have paid, but just from a capital generation perspective would be helpful just to get those two numbers.
Yeah, sure. So if we did a pro forma of 2014, it would be 225 from the bank and 200 from the brokers, so 425 total.
Got it. So then that's capital generation. Got it. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Steven Chubak with Nomura. Please proceed.
Good evening and congratulations. It's really exciting news.
Thank you.
So just first one's a quickie on the capital side. Matt, I was hoping you could verify where the Basel III ratio stands today and potentially dissect the benefit from the DTA side and also where the assets as well as RWA sit.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, at RWA, I mean, when you look at our risk-weighted ratios, they are incredibly high and only going higher. So they're not going to be I'd be quite surprised if there were constraints. So we focus on the leverage side. And I think while we don't have the numbers completed, just to give you some directional direction on those numbers. So at the parent, there's two things going on. The trust preferred securities will be coming out of capital, 75% in 2015, and then the remainder in 2016. And then on the DTA side, there'll be a larger amount of the DTA will be included in capital. When I put those two things together, the DTA being a positive and the trust preferreds being a negative, but we estimate the net impact of that is going to be an increase to that leverage ratio at the parent. Not dramatic, but an increase. Down at the bank, there is no impact of the TRUPS. So the primary driver down at the bank is going to be the deferred tax asset. Now, the deferred tax asset overall is around $1 billion. Roughly $600 million of that is down at the bank. And I would say broadly, half of that $600 million is included in capital today. So when I think through, well, what's the max increase that the DTA could have down at the bank? It'd be another $300 million. So I think that at least gives you some direction on what benefit we would expect under Basel III.
Well, thanks. That's really helpful. And then switching over to the expense side, you guided to low single-digit growth for 2015, and I appreciated the color on the incremental, I guess, cost build that we expect just relating to regulatory and compliance-related matters. How should we be thinking about that balance in terms of what's driving the growth, to the extent that it's investing in revenue-generating activities versus regulatory, cybersecurity, and other related functions, which are simply part of the new normal?
That's a fair question, and we've been pretty clear on where we've been investing, and it'll be the same in 2015, which is investing more in improving the client experience they have with E-Trade, and that involves customer-facing professionals as well as spending more on technology. There is no doubt that there's been a tremendous shift and the bar has been raised on the whole cyber front, and so we are absolutely investing in that as well as making sure that the networks we operate, the way we control and manage data is state-of-the-art, and so we're investing there as well. So those would be the three places where you'd see headcount added. And then, as Matthew mentioned, we'll invest in marketing as it makes sense and as we can be focused in order to drive the type of customer numbers you saw in the fourth quarter. So that's where we're going to continue to think about investing, as well as keeping an eye on what's happening on the revenue line so that we can protect our margins.
Thanks. And just last one from me. When thinking about managing to a specific capital constraint at the parent, is 9% going to be the same Tier 1 leverage bar that you're going to be managing to in terms of how much capital you have available for deployment? And could that potentially evolve over time?
Well, I mean, we don't have a specific ratio there, but I think when you factor in our goal of getting down to $1 billion of debt, right, inherently there's going to be some double leverage, which means the parent ratio would be something less than 9%. So other than that directional, we don't have an explicit ratio that we're focused on yet.
Okay, but we shouldn't be looking at something like the well-capitalized threshold, which is clearly much lower, around, I believe it's 5% actually, that's imposed by the regulators as being the bar that you would manage to.
Well, I'm sure every financial institution would enjoy being able to go down to that level. I'd be surprised if any of us could.
Fair enough. All right, well, congrats again, and thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Mike Carrier with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please proceed.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Matt, just on the balance sheet, you know, when you think about what you were talking about for the net interest spread, you know, for 2015, you know, just that guidance, are you assuming, you know, that you know, kind of new plan is in place? And should we be thinking, you know, like low single digit would be normal growth of, you know, if client cash balances move more normal, meaning there's not as much buying activity, you know, into the market?
So when you were talking about the spread guidance?
Yeah, meaning when you gave the spread guidance, you know, are you assuming in that, you know, that you have a more, you know, kind of normal level, you know, of client, you know, cash moving relative to what happened in 2014?
Yeah, I would. So the answer is no. I mean, the spread guidance was more, was less guidance. It was more as we sit here in a more difficult environment today, which is not, you know, only a few weeks removed from Q4. And even each time I'll do a calculation on the impact of the yield curve, it, as I'm doing the calculation, rates move dramatically in that hour. So it was more just to highlight if the environment we're in at this moment, the impact that environment would have. It is not a forecast on any other changes that we'd make, including the deposits on balance sheet.
Okay, got it. And then just as a follow-up, I don't know if you can give us any update on, you know, what you're seeing, you know, in the HELOC portfolio. I know in the past you've given, you know, some, you know, metrics, and maybe you didn't give them just because, you know, nothing has really, you know, changed or there wasn't anything to bring up. But just in terms of, you know, any of the payment, you know, rates that you're seeing among the customers, just any update there?
No, I mean, there's high-level stuff, Mike, I think would be helpful. I mean, the primary thing we're focused on are the home equities converting from interest-only to amortizing. I think everybody knows very little of that's occurred so far. The majority of it happens in 2016, of $1 billion, and then $600 million in 2015. So we've had very little occur so far. But for the amounts that have occurred so far, if you just look at from a quarter-to-quarter basis, our delinquency metrics, our actual losses, all those things continue to either be stable or improve. So at least that's a high level on what we see going on there. Keeping in mind, again, it's small balances. They're the oldest vintages that have come through, so it's the better quality stuff. Beyond that, I wouldn't really highlight anything going on in the portfolio other than we continue to focus on the end of draw movements.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Harris with Wells Fargo Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Hey, guys. So another one real quick on the capital. You know, under the old plan, there's the goal of stepping the bank down to 8% ultimately. You know, I know you've got this restructuring going on that you announced today. Is that 8% bogey, you know, kind of completely off the table for the interim, or is that possibly a target you could look to seek, you know, in a year or two's time?
We've been consistent that that's a target we're shooting for. We'll continue to aim that way. If we change that, we'll let you know. It's a target that we will continue to have discussion and dialogue with our regulators. And as things continue in that vein, we will update you if we have anything to report.
Okay, fair enough. Follow-up question on your loan portfolio. This might be a little tough question to answer, but have you guys done any stress testing on that portfolio as to whether there are any concentrations in areas that might have a negative impact from, you know, falling energy prices? So just wondering if there's, you know, any significant concentrations in areas like Texas or similar places.
Sure. I mean, it's not specific to falling oil prices, but being subject to the stress testing process, or the DFAST stress process, we've definitely stressed the loan portfolio. As far as concentrations go, our portfolio was built by us buying it in the secondary market, meaning our concentrations are pretty consistent with where mortgages simply reside in America, which means our biggest concentration by far is California, then New York, and things like that. So there's nothing unique to oil or anything that we would be concerned about.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Devin Ryan with JMP Securities. Please proceed.
Hey, thank you. Good afternoon, and congratulations on the great news today. Most of my questions were asked. I just have a couple of cleanups here. So following up on the loan resets and you know, thinking about just the next couple of years, are there any months here kind of in this year that $700 million is going to amortize where it's concentrated just as we're looking towards that? And then you know, the bigger chunk in the next year, is that front-end loaded or back-end loaded? So I'm assuming that would impact kind of the 12-month look-through for provisioning.
So the Well, you can imagine
$600 million.
Yeah, so $600 million to $15 million.
Well, $700 million total, right?
$600 million and $15 million and $1 billion in 16. So 1.6 billion total of that's going to start to amortize. While it's not exactly split by every quarter, I'd say there's nothing dramatic that one quarter is incredibly low and another quarter is incredibly high. Right? It's not the same every quarter, but I don't think there's anything I would highlight on be aware of this quarter or that quarter.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And then just on the fees and service charges, nice tick up from the prior quarter. And I think I heard order routing fees are a little bit higher, but is there anything else in there that's seasonal, or should we think about this as a reasonable starting point?
It's a reasonable starting point. The biggest item in there is payments for order flow. The second biggest item is basically a recurring fee income, whether it be from our managed products or from our mutual funds. And as balances continue to grow, those amounts continue to grow as well. It's up to roughly $12 million a quarter now. So that's, the nature of that stuff's pretty consistent and should grow, we would hope would grow over time. And then everything else in there is pretty small. So those are the two biggest buckets.
Got it. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Christopher Allen with Evercore. Please proceed with your question.
Evening, guys. On the NIM outlook, obviously SEC lending has been the key driver in recent periods. You talked about it kind of coming back down. Are we talking about more towards levels that we saw in the back half of 13, early 14? And anything to think about in terms of the securities portfolio moving forward? Are current kind of run rates kind of stable? Or those, do you expect those to kind of roll over a little bit too, given where we're seeing the yield curve right now?
So on the stock loan side, I think if you look at the yield table in the release, it was that on the stock borrow side it was north of 20% in yield.
Yep.
I would say where we are today is probably something north of 10%. Right, it's come back in a pretty big way. And again, this stuff is very volatile. There is no way to know whether it goes down from here or returns back to the Q4 levels tomorrow. Right, it could move pretty quickly. But that's where it is at the moment. On the security side, I think that the primary driver there is going to be assuming the balance sheet grows, which means we would be buying securities, what's the interest rate environment look like? And specifically, what's the interest rate environment look like where we buy bonds, which is more in the belly of the curve? So when you look at the 10-year coming down in a big way in Q4, well, the belly of the curve didn't move much at all, so it didn't have a huge impact on things, versus the last 2 or 3 weeks, the 3 to 5-year point of the curve moved down in a pretty big way. So it all depends on where that plays out and how much balance sheet growth we have would drive whether or not there'd be a meaningful change in security yields going forward.
Got it. And just, on the balance sheet growth topic, is a simple way to think about it in terms of maybe accelerated deposits and is the 9.2% adjusted Tier 1 ratio plus potentially the $300 million from Basel III, is that kind of the key lever if you wanted to increase your deposits and bank balance sheet specifically?
Yeah, that was the $300 million was just to range the potential benefit of the DTA.
Sure.
But when we think through in 2015 and managing to the 9%, we will be subject to Basel III then. So if there is a positive impact there, it would be capital capacity and growing the balance sheet could be one of the potential options there.
Thanks. And just one last question. Are you also considering paying down your wholesale debt with the excess cash you have on here? Or is that one of your latter options?
Yeah, so when we think through over the long term, the things that we want to accomplish, running off the wholesale book is an objective. Running off the loan portfolio is an objective. So sitting here today, we have no plans to change that natural runoff, but we're always analyzing and looking to see if that dynamic changes. So where we sit today, no plans to do that, but we're always analyzing it.
Great. Thanks, guys.
And our final question comes from the line of Brian Bedell with Deutsche Bank. Please proceed.
Good evening, folks. Congrats also on the announcement. Matt and/or Paul, as you think about the long-term implications of the excess capital, aside from the additional DTA that comes back into the capital, have you modeled to what extent you think you will be generating more excess capital in this new structure versus the prior structure, say, over the next 3 or 4 years?
There's
a lot of moving parts to that.
Yeah, well, we definitely look at it. I mean, the thing I can highlight for you is more the pro forma of 2014, which I suspect you heard, but just to repeat it, if we took the process we had in 2014 that generated the $300 million, under the new structure, it would be 425. So I don't have guidance going forward, but hopefully that gives you an idea of the difference.
Right. Okay. So you use that. That's helpful. And then just Paul, or actually Matt, if you want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of the cash management, how quickly can you move balances between sweep deposits off balance sheet and on balance sheet? Is that something you can do pretty much intra-quarter, or is there a time lag to that?
So where we sit today, it's a little bit difficult and time-consuming to do it. There's a bunch of different buckets. There's deposits with third-party banks. There's deposits in money funds, and there's a bunch of different processes and procedures to do that. Over time, as we implement this new program, we will have much more control to move it back on balance sheet quite quickly. So as we put that in place, I think we'll be in a position in future quarters to walk you through with more specificity how that works. But just know that it'll put us in a position to act faster in the future.
Okay, great. And then maybe just lastly, just the Paul, you mentioned a lot of technology improvements that you've worked on all year. I guess maybe just to frame what you think, how that might improve your organic growth rate and growth in DARTs as the year progresses. Obviously, the macro environment determines a lot more from that, but do you see sort of an inflection upward in organic growth as a result of the initiatives that you've put in place?
Well, certainly I'm quite hopeful that we're taking the right steps to do that, and I think we're just starting to see those shoots start to emerge in Q4. This is a retail business, and accretion of new accounts and value related to those accounts takes a bit of time. And so we're feeling good about what we've done, and we're hearing good things from our customers. And anything we do to improve the experience and engage them more has historically led to higher account values and more activity with those customers. So, yeah, I'd stick to what I said during the prepared remarks. I'm sanguine about our opportunities.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for taking my questions, and congrats again.
Thanks a lot.
And we do have one final question. It comes from the line of Patrick O'Shaughnessy with Raymond James. Please proceed.
Hey, thanks for squeezing me in. So my question would be, how close of an eye do you guys keep on the conversation about potentially raising the SIFI cap? And if it were changed, how much would that change your calculus in terms of potential capital uses?
We stay pretty close to that discussion, Patrick, and without giving too snappy a reply on this one, it would absolutely just reduce some of the anxiety we have about going over 50, and so it would just make those economics more attractive in the mix of all the other things we're doing in determining how to create value, paying down debt, returning capital to shareholders, investing in the business, bringing deposits on. All those things go in the mix. If 50 were to move up, and quite frankly, I think it should move up, that would just make it easier to look at that without some of the ambiguity of estimating the complete economics.
Great. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick.
And we have no further questions at this time. Mr. Idzik, I'll turn it back to you for any final remarks.
Thank you very much, all of you, for spending some time with us this evening. It was a lot to announce, and thank you for your attention. Feel really good about what we have to say today. So thank you, and have a good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a great day.